All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Nitai Gaur Grimanandi. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vananta Samane Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharanena Vasishya Sinyavadi Pashkatinista. Where is your brother today?
He's sick.
Oh no. Yes? I didn't ask you.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Om Aganati Minandasya. Om Aganati Minandasya. Jana Jana Salakaya. Chaksu Sumiratan. Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapanantikam Vancha Kalpatu Vrascha Kripasindu Vai Vrascha Patitanam Pramane Vyo Vaishname Vyo Namo Namaha. Reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 6. This chapter is entitled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the greatest scholar in India during his time. A scholar, at that time, meant one who knew and had assimilated the Vedic literature. That was scholarship. And very much these personalities who are great scholars, practically they knew everything by heart. All the religious scriptures they knew completely by heart, had memorized it. And they had assimilated, they had heard it from their teachers. They had considered it very carefully, and therefore through their great intelligence they had understood what the conclusions were. But depending upon the methodology by which one approaches the absolute truth, when one studies the scriptures, one will reach different conclusions. So when one studies Shastra by the use of his own intelligence, and one practices Jnana Yoga, which basically makes use of one's own abilities, one's discriminatory powers to understand the absolute truth, one separates oneself from the mind, from the body, from the mind. When one understands the absolute truth, one understands only a specific feature of that absolute truth, which is Brahman, the all-pervading aspect. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was that kind of a scholar. In the Vaishnava community, there are also great, great scholars, but because their methodology of approaching the absolute truth, of understanding the absolute truth, is descending, which means that they attempt to please Krishna and then expect and await Krishna's mercy, these Vaishnava scholars, they understand a different aspect of that same absolute truth. Vedanti tat tattva vigyas tattvam is jnanam adhyam. Absolute truth is adhyam. It means it's non-dual. There is only one absolute truth, but it is perceived differently depending upon the methodology that one is using to perceive it. Just like sometimes if you look at the hills, sometimes it looks as if there are clouds. You get one concept of what it is from a distance. Then if you get closer, you can see actually it's some hills. And if you get still closer and you drive or walk there, you can see not only there are hills there, but there's houses and people and cars and flower gardens and flowers and bugs living in the flowers and everything. And the flowers have fragrance, and there's red ones and yellow ones. You can go into incredible detail if you're very, very close. So similarly, if we get very close to the Absolute Truth through bhakti, we can know that Absolute Truth, not in a vague way, but in great, great detail. And when that great detail is known through bhakti, then one's heart is completely captivated by that Absolute Truth. And that Absolute Truth, in the greatest detail, is known as Krishna. Yes, Krishna. Sridhar Swami has come. Hare Krishna. So Sava Bhoma Bhattacharya was now being instructed by his brother-in-law Gopinathacharya. Now Gopinathacharya had he knew Mahaprabhu from where? From where? Where? South India? Either that or Nadia. One of the two. Maybe it was Nadia. From Nadia. Yeah, they're relatives, but from Nadia. And he knew Mahaprabhu from there. And he knew Mahaprabhu's position as the Supreme Lord. And he told Gopinath, he told Savabhoma Bhattacharya, the reason why you cannot understand Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord is because you have not received one drop of his mercy. And when one receives some mercy from Mahaprabhu, then you will be able to understand. And this is the process of bhakti. That understanding comes after mercy. When one achieves some mercy, some descending mercy, then one actually understands. So the attempt of the devotee, not in a business way, but a natural, loving way, is to please the Lord, and then he hopes but does not demand that Krishna will give him one drop of mercy. Eka bindu dhya. Just give me one drop of mercy. And the one drop of Krishna's mercy is sufficient to drown the whole world in mercy, because that drop is so powerful. So how to get Krishna's mercy? This is how the devotee is wondering and thinking, how can I get Krishna's mercy? How can I please Krishna? How, like the Parchetas, they had pleased the Lord, and the Lord asked them, what canto are the Parchetas written about? They're mentioned in the sixth, but their pastimes are not in the sixth. Fourth canto, at the end of the fourth canto. Who knows who the Parchetas' most famous forefather was? There's a tough one. Their father was, anyone remember who their father was? Prachini Barishad. And Prachini Barishad was a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. I think Dhruva Maharaj's son was Antaradan, and Antaradan's son was Haviradan, and Haviradan's son was Prachini Barishat. And Prachini Barishat's sons, 10 of them, were the Parchetas. So when they pleased the Lord said to them, whatever benediction you want, I will give you. And the Parchetas' reply was, what is the need for us to tell you anything what we want? Because you already know everything. Ishvara Sava Bhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati. Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. He's in everyone's heart. He knows everything that everyone is thinking at every time. And he doesn't get confused with all the differences. One person is thinking, I hate you. Another person, that same person is thinking, well, I hate you. And he doesn't get confused as to who is thinking what and who is right and who is deserving of this and that. He knows everything. He has inconceivably powerful consciousness. So Krishna is in everyone's heart. So the Pachetas said, there's no need of me telling you anything, of us telling you what we want, because... Maybe you can close the door, please. Because you know everything. But what do we want? Gradually they answered what they wanted. And they said, we want your satisfaction. We want to please you. This was the desire that was in their heart. This is an incredible desire when faced with being able to have anything and everything they wanted. They didn't even ask for a benediction. They didn't even ask, oh, now that we've pleased you, now that we can get something. But all we want is the satisfaction of pleasing you. That is our satisfaction. That is called love. When one is only interested in the pleasure of another, that is called love. And love, practically speaking, doesn't truly exist in this world. Everything that is done with a motive to get. The shopkeepers, they're advertising sales, we're going to give you, give you, give you, give you. But is giving actually what is on their mind? Not in the least. They will take more than they give. They must. Their interest is taking, not giving. So everyone is a shopkeeper. And we tend to approach Krishna in this mood too, as shopkeepers. And Krishna will accept whatever we do, yayatamam prapadyante, and he will reciprocate with us. But he won't give himself to his devotee unless the devotee truly loves him. Because when he gives himself to a devotee, he is actually under the control of that devotee. The Supreme Lord becomes controlled by his devotee. So how wonderful is that when Krishna gives himself to his devotee? So he doesn't do that cheaply. He doesn't do that cheaply at all. He only gives, just like if I have a very, very, very intimate, and everyone has very, very dear secrets in the core of their heart. Will we just put those on the front page of the newspaper? Will we go and tell everyone our deepest secrets? What do you think? Who do you tell your deepest secrets to? Someone that you trust very, very, very intimately. Someone who you have deep trust isn't going to use that against you. You trust due to their love for you. They will only use it properly. So Krishna is like that. Or because Krishna is like that, we are like that. Kill him, Edward. Are you lucky or unlucky that you missed?
I was going to catch it.
What was it? Tiger?
It was a fly.
It was a fly. A tiger fly. Okay. So, Mahaprabhu, or rather Gopinath, Mahaprabhu was practically invisible. He was seen by Sarvabrahmacharya as an ordinary person, as a sannyasi, exalted ordinary person, because Sarvabrahma Bhattacharya did not have love of Mahaprabhu, and therefore Mahaprabhu hadn't revealed himself. So Gopinathacharya continues speaking. You have seen the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during his absorption in an ecstatic mood. despite directly perceiving the symptoms of the Supreme Lord in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you cannot understand him. This is commonly called illusion. When something is there but you can't understand it, you're illusion, you're covered. A person influenced by the external energy, what is the external energy called? Maya. And what is a person who's influenced by Maya like? He's an illusion. And what are the symptoms of that illusion? What are some symptoms?
Bewildered.
What are some of the bewilderments? That's the prime intoxication or bewilderment, identification with the body. Although we are eternal, and every one of us has personal experience of the fact that we remember being the same person but in a young child's body or a youth's body. We've given up those bodies. Where have those bodies gone? If we were the body, we would have gone also when the body went. But the bodies have gone, but we've stayed. So we are not the body. We're souls. We're eternal. So dehantara praptiya dhira. So when a sober person examines this, he understands that he is not his body, that he's a soul, and namuyate, he's not bewildered at the death of the body. But one has to be very sober to not be bewildered at that time. Why? Why does one have to be really completely sober not to be bewildered at that time? Yeah. If you've been through death with a person or watched a person leave this world, you understand how attached we are to the body, how attached everyone is to their body, and how bewildered one gets, and there's pain and so many things take place, very frightening, because all that we know in this world is the body. And we have so many things we're not willing to leave behind, so many things we like, so many things, so many abilities, all our talents connected to the body become like weights at that time. In what sense do they become like weights? That's not exactly what I had in mind. But weights, yeah. Yeah, and you're carrying them, and you're trying to swim across to across the ocean of death. But you're carrying so many things that you don't want to let go. Are you going to sneeze? Are you considering sneezing? Well, that's good. So all these weights we carry, the things that we like, that we're attached to, the people, the possessions, those things we consider ours, they're like weights, because we have to leave everything behind when we're dying, but we're carrying them with us at the same time. And they weigh us down and they drown us. If you're carrying weights and trying to swim at the same time, forget it. You'll drown. So one has to be completely sober, and that means to not identify with anything that isn't him at all. So what isn't me? There's a long list of things that I consider mine and that I'm very attached to that actually have nothing to do with me. Every hair on my arm, every hair on my head, the nose, the ears, my legs, my possessions, my stereo set, my tapes, all the books, car, family, money, land, whatever I have, I want it. It's me. It's part of me. If I lose it, I'm in anxiety, I'm fearful, I'm angry, because I'm identifying with it. This is an intoxicated state. So at the time of death, one has to be very sober. Not has to be, but it's in one's interest to be sober. Why? Because all these things that I am considering that I possess are illusion, and they are great weights. When I'm trying to swim across the ocean of death, they will sink me into material life again, with the result of birth and death and birth and death. Samsara dhava, the forest fire of birth and death. Someone has to be sober. That means out of illusion. A person, Gopinatha Choja says, up to Savabhoma Bhattacharya, a person influenced by the external energy is called Bahimukjan. What does Bahimukjan mean? Huh? Yes. Muk means face. Bahir. He's turned his face away. This jan, this person, has turned his face away from the Supreme Lord. So a person influenced by the external energy is called Bahimukjan. That means he's turned away from the Lord, and when you turn away from the Lord, you face the shadow, your own shadow, and that is called Maya. A person influenced by the external energy is called Bahimukjan, a mundane person, because despite his perception, he cannot understand the real substance. Hearing Gopinatha Charya say this, Savabhoma Bhattacharya smiled and began to speak as follows. Prabhupada's purport. When one's heart is not cleansed, one cannot awaken the transcendental nature of devotional service. What did I just read? What did that sentence say? When one's heart is not cleansed, he can not awaken the transcendental nature of devotional service. What does that mean? Yes, he cannot see the spiritual. But there are some interesting words in there. Awaken. What does awaken mean there? What's the opposite of being awake? Everyone knows that. Especially Sunday mornings. What is the opposite of being awakened? So that means that there's something sleeping within us, which cannot be awakened until one's heart is cleansed. And what is that thing that is sleeping within us? The transcendental nature of devotional service. When you talk about nature, like you say, this person has a really grumpy nature, or this person has a really happy nature, or this person has an angry nature. So nature means a quality, and a quality is attached to a person. So when we say that we have a transcendental nature of devotional service, it means that we, our actual nature, is to be devotedly serving Krishna. That's our actual nature. That's the common quality that we all have. We all have individual, not common aspects of our nature, like someone may be this tall and someone may be that tall, someone may have this color hair, someone may have that color hair, someone may be able to leap as tall as over a tree, and another person may not be able to jump at all. Someone can sing, someone can cook, someone can play the drum, someone has a lot of energy to work hard, another person is thoughtful, another person has an ability to make money. These are individual aspects of our nature. But also there is a common aspect of our nature. And what is the common aspect of everyone's nature? Jivera sarupoi, the sarup, Svarup, our own form, our own nature. Jivar, Krishnadas. We are Krishna's, servant. We devotedly, our nature is to serve him with great, great, great love. That is our nature. That which is inseparable from us. There are so many things that we are that are separable from us. My ability to run is separated from me with age. My ability to do this and that will be separated from me when I leave my body. But the thing that will not be separated from me in any circumstance is my natural tendency to love Krishna. And that natural... So someone can say, if it can't be separated from you in any circumstance, how come you don't exhibit it now? How come you're covered? How come you don't love Krishna if it's inseparable from you? And what's the answer to that question?
Illusion.
Okay, I'm illusion, but that means the illusion has taken away my ability to love Krishna, so therefore it's not part of me. If it can be taken from me, it's not part of me.
Covered up.
Yeah.
You turn the face away.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's asleep. We've put it to sleep, so to speak. We've put that part of us to sleep. But another way to look at it is that same tendency to love Krishna in illusion is being manifest in a perverted way in the material world. Just like if we put a red filter over that light, the natural tendency of the light is to shine. What color is that light shining? White? Yellowish white, probably. It's actually been analyzed. There's lots of yellow in that. So that's its natural color. So when it's appearing red, it's due to the filter. It's still shining yellow, but the filter is making it appear red. So our tendency to love Krishna is perverted by the filter of illusion. Perverted into the material world. So instead of loving Krishna, we love so many other things. What things? Everything else. We try to repose our love in so many things. But these things, because it's not natural, will not truly satisfy us. We can try until we're exhausted. My mom used to say, until the cows come home. And we didn't even have any cows, so it would take really a long time for the cows to come home. First you have to go and get them, then you have to send them out, then you have to wait for them to come home. So you can try until you're exhausted waiting for the cows to come home. You can try every possible thing you think is to repose your love in. That will make you can try every single thing. You can make a really long list of everything that you want to repose your love in that you think may bring you the satisfaction that you want, but each of those will let you down because it's not our natural consciousness. So when one's heart is not cleansed, so how to get to our natural consciousness? Our heart has to be cleansed. When one's heart is not cleansed, one cannot awaken the transcendental nature of devotional service. But even when one's heart is cleansed, that's not sufficient to love Krishna. Why? When one's heart is not cleansed, there's a logical expression that means that says it's necessary but not sufficient. So something may be necessary but not sufficient. See, I told you. Just like If you want to listen to the Bhagavatam class, it's necessary that you're there. But being there isn't sufficient to ensure that you'll hear it. It's necessary but not sufficient, because like a fly is there, but he's not hearing the Bhagavatam class. So necessary but not sufficient. So two things have to be there. I mean, not there. It's necessary, but other things are required too. So for one to be to actually awaken one's own nature of devotional service, one's heart has to be cleansed. But what else has to be there?
Mercy.
Because if one's heart is completely free of all material things, one may be able to realize Brahman, but one needs something else to realize Krishna, and that is Krishna's mercy. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, without hearts being cleansed, one cannot awaken the nature of devotional service. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yesham tvantakata papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva moha niyamukta bhajante mam drida vrata. What does bhajante mam mean?
Worship
me. Serve me with great devotion. Bhajante mam, Krishna says. Drida vrata. It's a very firm, strong vow. One cannot be fixed. And that's what? That's the last line. Bhajante mam dridavata. One cannot be fixed in devotion. Yesham tvantagata papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva moha vinirmukta nirmukta. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, there has to be some piety, whose sinful activities are completely eradicated and not sinful, and who are freed, te dvanva, dvanva means two, the duality, moha, the nirmukta, free from the duality of delusion. These three characteristics, piety, freedom from sin, and freedom from illusion, the dualities of, what are the dualities of illusion in this world? Yeah? What other dualities of illusion are there? Yeah. And how are these illusion? They exist, certainly. I mean, sometimes you feel pained and sometimes you feel pleasured. So they exist. In what sense you have to be? One, does one have to become free from that illusion?
We're experiencing them?
Yeah, an attachment to them. And that in the material world, one thing is good and another thing is bad. So you want that. And you don't want that in the material world. That's the illusion that one has to be afraid of. Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata. Icha dvesha, icha means desire. Dvesha means aversion. So one has to become free from desiring and being averse to things in the material world. Why? Because one is caught in this way. One's whole life is spent, I want, I want, I want, I don't want, I don't want, I don't want. Being pushed and pulled around things that we imagine are going to make us happy and bring us misery. Pushing away the things that we imagine will bring us misery, and trying to pull close to us those things that we imagine will make us happy. So this completely traps one in the material world, eats up one's whole mentality and life. On the other hand, from the spiritual point of view, certain things are desirable and certain things are worthy of being averse to. So this is referring to the material world, the material way of thinking of things, where I am the center. If For my pleasure I want, for my pleasure I don't want. And in the spiritual world, anukulasya sankalpa, patikulasya varjanam, this is surrender. When one accepts, wants those things that are favorable for his service to Krishna, and doesn't want, and pushes away, is averse to those things that aren't favorable for his developing his love for Krishna. That is called sharanagati, surrender.
Delusion.
Huh?
Delusion.
Delusion means illusion. Same. If someone is deluded, it means that he is in illusion. There's a psychological phrase, delusions of grandeur, which means what? Yes, he thinks he is so great, but he's just imagining it. So when it's very, very extreme in a person, some person is so crazy, he thinks that he's John Howard. He's so great. And he's an illusion. He's not this great personality. So he's imagining it. He's deluded, an illusion, thinking he's a great Napoleon or someone, one or very, very, but he's not. So this is our position. He's just actually an insignificant fellow. So we all have delusions of grandeur. So someone said it means being puffed up. Because we're so tiny, insignificant, and powerless. So these are the qualities. One has to be free from the delusion, duality of delusion. Then when one has these three qualities, one can engage himself in service with determination, Krishna service. When one is actually engaged in pure devotional service, it is understood that he has already attained freedom from all reactions to sinful activities. In other words, it is to be understood that devotees are already freed from sin. A sinful person, a miscreant, duskriti, cannot engage in devotional service. Nor can one engage in devotional service simply on the basis of scholarly speculation. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord in order to render pure devotional service. One has to, what? What was the word? Wait. Does anyone like waiting? Waiting is one of the worst things. What does it require you to have? What quality? Patience. And what do you need to be patient? To be in the mode of goodness.
Assurance.
Huh?
Assurance.
Yeah, you have to have confidence. Yeah.
You're gonna get everything.
Yeah. Yes, right. That's really true. You have to have confidence. Otherwise, you may be if you're fully satisfied in being patiently waiting at the wrong bus stop, you might be there a really long time. So one needs patience is one of the qualities that's required. So one has to wait for the mercy of the Lord in order to render pure devotional service. One can't do it by one's own power. The Bhattacharya said, we are just having a discussion among friends and considering the points described in the scriptures. Do not become angry. I'm simply speaking on the strength of the Shastras. Please don't take any offense. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is certainly a great uncommon devotee, but we cannot accept him as an incarnation of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu, because according to Shastra, there is no incarnation in the age of Kali. Ataiva Triyuga Kari Kahi Vishnu Nam. Another name for Lord Vishnu is Triyuga, because there is no incarnation of Lord Vishnu in Kali Yuga. Indeed, this is the verdict of revealed scriptures. So we'll stop here. So the discussion is going on amongst relatives, friends, on the basis of Shastra. And Sarvabhauma Acharya says, don't get so angry because I say that Mahaprabhu isn't the Supreme Lord. We're talking about Shastra. No need to get angry. Gopinath Acharya is furious. He said, you can't understand who Mahaprabhu is because you don't have his mercy. Because you're a dry twig of a scholar. When you get his mercy, then you'll understand. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
How come Sadhana Guru Bhattacharya was such a big scholar and he was a pujari there?
How come?
If he's not understanding the Lord, but how come he's serving Lord?
He's serving Lord Jagannath.
It's a very big position.
Very big position.
Really, not that.
He's what?
Really strong.
He's very strong, but he's not a devotee. There's so many strong people who aren't devotees. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not a devotee. That's why he doesn't understand. He's a Mayavadi, a Brahmavadi, a non-devotee. How come the Lord has put him there? Because he wants to fix him up properly. Wants to take out the broken part and replace it.
You want liberation.
See?
It's a leader.
Huh?
It's a
leader. Yeah? He's a great soul. He wanted to show how a great soul, a person such as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is so learned, is still missing something if that's all he has is his learning. He's missing bhakti. He wants to show that bhakti is the ultimate. So when he converts this great scholar into an ecstatic devotee, it sets an example, it teaches something for the world. So this lila is going on. But there are so many great, powerful, pure scholars that aren't devotees. You know that?
How can one serve in the Lord's temple?
Well, next time you go to Jagannath Puri, you can ask them. if you don't recognize Mahaprabhu, how can you serve? Tell them. You ask them. Because they say, we do recognize Lord Jagannath. Huh? Who? Mahaprabhu?
No. In the case of someone is worshipping a deity.
Lord Jagannath. Yes, they understand Lord Jagannath is Lord Jagannath. And Jagannath, he is the Lord of the universe. But they don't necessarily accept the Yuga avatar of Mahaprabhu.
That verse is quoted from Bhagavad Gita that if one doesn't have these heart clean, then one cannot necessarily have devotional service or the transcendental nature of devotional service awakened. So you're explaining that is necessary but not sufficient. And that what we need is the mercy. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that is only possible by association of devotees. So how is that? I mean, we generally tend to think, okay, I need Krishna's mercy or Guru's mercy. But, it applies. But we need the devotee's mercy. Does that apply? We have to wait.
This is how Krishna gives you mercy through the Vaishnavas, through Vaishnava sadhus. That's how one gets mercy. That's how Krishna chooses to give his mercy to a conditioned soul through the devotees. So that's how the mercy, Krishna's mercy comes. So is it Krishna's mercy or the devotee's mercy? It's both. It's the devotee's desire, but what is he carrying? He's carrying Krishna's mercy. But that wasn't what you were asking.
Basically, that should be the perspective that we should have. Because we generally, when we discuss Krishna, then we think, okay, Krishna somewhere out there, and Guru, but he's not here. But it's hard to translate that more myself. Like, okay, I'm going we go to the temple, and there is Krishna's mercy.
Krishna's mercy comes in many forms. If one is awakened, he won't see anything outside of Krishna's mercy. But to think that Krishna's mercy is limited to Krishna or one's Diksha Guru is not very broad-minded. But I don't think devotees think like that. No, it's not. It's not. It's just baby. Baby who's not grown up yet. Kanista. I don't think the devotees quite think like that. Huh?
He
needs devotees.
He doesn't directly give to them.
That's not his principle. He gives to the devotees. Very important point in Vaishnava philosophy. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastakoi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. Not once or twice. Lava Matra Sarasange. But his meeting was very, very, very deep and heart to heart. He accepted him fully. We'd meet a million times but don't accept at all. But it takes qualification. So if one can say that the qualification, I can't be more than I am, so I can't be more qualified than I am, so it's not any fault of mine that I'm so foolish. But that's not a very good attitude, even though there's some truth in it. It's not a proper attitude.